Welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show with Nancy Hopkins, Walt Silva, and Dolly Howard. This is a production of Cosmic Reality Radio.
Turn away from disaster, horizon side. Choose your heart as a master.
Welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show. It's April 23rd, 2019. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Walt Silva and Dolly Howard. And this is a production of Cosmic Reality Radio. So, hi guys, you there? Hello.
I'm here.
Nancy and Dolly.
Good to hear you.
Can you hear us?
I can. I can hear you both.
Oh, okay.
I didn't
know if we were still muted.
No, I got you on. Did you hear the new theme song? I put your name in it.
You did?
I did. I fixed it.
Oh, I didn't even recognize it.
Well, it sounds the same. It's just got your name added. I was so proud of myself to remember to do it this week. What's it been, 5 weeks, 6 weeks? I don't know.
That's okay. People know.
Yeah, people know. So, you're both doing good. Dolly, you said you woke up today and you're doing pretty good, so that's a good indication that
I'm doing even better than when I woke up.
Oh, okay.
Wonderful. Yeah, Walt helped me. Via the posse.
Walt helped you?
Yeah. The posse kept bugging Walt to tell me something. And so he finally did. Boy, I'm feeling better. Yeah. And it's because of Mr. Spiral. Because it involved Mr. Spiral. I had to thank him for doing a couple of things for my body, and boy, he did. I'm better, feeling better right now, anyway.
Awesome. Walter. Sir.
Good evening, Chief.
How are you?
Very good. I was watching that the video that's in that link that you sent me about that vortex math and Tesla. So that was really, really interesting, which goes to explain, like, why the spirals are so effective, because they're actually based on three vectors as opposed to two vectors on the life light rings. So I didn't know. It ended up being that way, but I didn't know. I wasn't even looking for the number three, but that's how it ended up.
The 369 thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tesla.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of connections with but is it fair to talk about this if Dolly hasn't? Did you send Dolly the link so she could look at it?
Oh, hell.
I don't want her feeling left out.
I did.
Seriously?
I did.
It sounds like something I wouldn't understand anyway.
Well, the thing is that I saw the connection to another thing. In the past, in other shows, I have mentioned the book Initiation by Elizabeth Hage. And I have read about it from other sources, but it always stands out in my mind, the memory of having read it in that book first, when she is 3,000 years ago in Egypt, when her teacher Amenhotep is giving her esoteric teachings. He explains to her about the nature of what we call the solid world, the material world. And he goes on to explain that what you're actually seeing is 50% of something. Like, for example, you're looking at the table in the middle of the kitchen. Well, you're actually looking at 50% of the table, because the other 50% of the table is on the other plane, is in like what we call the quantum field or the plane of the unmanifest. And he's explaining to her that in reality creation flashes, but it's like the scan lines on a TV screen that go back and forth, up and down, but they go so fast drawing the image, your eye sees a solid image. It doesn't see any flickering unless you use an instrument. So he's explaining to her that flashing on and off is so incredibly fast that people are not aware of it. And solid, something solid, looks solid and feels solid and smells solid, and all your five senses acknowledge that you're surrounded, you know, by a solid world. You know, the chair that you're sitting on and the computer in front of you and so on and so forth. When in reality, it's half the time is actually not, it's not even here. It's in the other side. So I was reminded of that when the explanation in the video is very good in the sense that he's more graphic the way he's explaining things as opposed to being just pure solid math, which I find very impersonal and difficult to conceive because you know my pet peeve. If you're going to teach me something, show me what it's for. You know, just learning trivia, I don't have patience for that. I want, if I'm going to learn stuff, it's something that I can grab and use and make good use of it.
And you think so, that mathematics is trivia, right? No, seriously.
Not trivia, well, but just for its own sake, like people that like playing like mind games and puzzles with math, just for passing time. I'll give you a perfect example of useful math. In another text that I had read years ago, years ago when I read the Flower of Life, the two volumes by Drumvalo Melchizedek, in one of the chapters, he goes on to explain how for the ancients, mathematical concepts that are very difficult to grasp in modern times, for them was extremely easy. They didn't need computers because they had a totally different attitude and a different grasp of math. So he gives one example that in today's scientific world, if you need to do any kind of calculation that requires the value of pi, as you know, pi is a never-ending number. I mean, you can go out to a million digits and it's still not ending. It goes on and on and on. So the accuracy of your calculations will rely up to some point to the precision you're going to use with a given number. And the same thing goes for phi or phi. It's 1.618 and it just goes on infinitely like pi. But the ancients didn't need computers and they didn't need to break their heads with calculations of that nature. They had a practical way to represent finitely these infinite numbers. So they didn't bother saying pi, 3 point something, something, something. They said 22 over 7. That's it, a fraction, 22 divided by 7. So in my work, when I've had to make things and design things and I need to figure out, okay, given this diameter, okay, how much material do I need to be able to put around this, how much material I need to cut to be able to encompass this cylinder or encompass this circular body. So instead of doing pi, when I'm doing the calculations, I just do times 22 divided by 7. And I get a finite number, and it works just fine. When I cut the material, everything just fits perfectly. There's no excess. There's no shortage. So the ancients had more metaphysical or spiritual grasp of this, of math in general. First off, because I went on to watch the second video, the one that follows the first one, which is even more insightful. The image that starts arising from the information, at least for me, is that if you can imagine, you know, a giant platform, and on this platform you have created the reality that you want. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You've created a reality, and this reality is sitting on this platform. Well, that platform would be upheld by three pillars, 3, 6, and 9. Those would be the three pillars sustaining that reality, because every proportion, every measure, everything is going to be dependent on those three values, because when the gentleman in the second video goes on to show all other numbers except 3, 6, and 9, it's like Amenhotep's explanation of the manifested world. It's, you're only seeing part of it. The other part is on the other side. It's in the quantum field. It's unmanifest. It's like the, it's, you're seeing 50% of the table. On the other end is the empty table, for example. And this is what you see here. You could be looking, you're looking at these charts and tables full of numbers, but when you look at them a certain way, you see the 3 and the 6 and the 9. They're actually hidden behind, they're like in the background, in the plane of the unmanifest. Even 9, which is supposed to represent everything, actually goes and ends up representing 0. For example, one of the things that they talk about is digital roots of numbers. And the term kind of confused me because I've never seen that in math. I mean, I've seen calculus and derivatives and infinitesimals and stuff like that in school. But, you know, digital root, what is this? And it turns out that it's a term they use when you have a number, a greater than one digit number. Digital root is when you add all the numbers together and you keep adding them together until you end up with a one digit. So, for example, if you have the number 3,954, if you add up all those four digits, you'll end up reducing it to the number 3. But here's the thing about the mysterious magical thing about the number 9 is that it represents everything, but at the same time, it represents nothing, because in that four-digit number, 3,954, if you get rid of the 9 and if you get rid of all the numbers that add up to 9, you end up with the digital root. So if you get rid of the 9 and you get rid of 5 and 4 equal 9, you just end up with a 3. That's the answer. That's the digital root of that whole number. Because if you do add them together, that's what you end up with. You end up with 3. So it's really interesting how these three, it's like these three numbers are like foundations holding up the rest of the manifested world, and how the numbers, like any number added to 9, if you get a two-digit number and you add those two digits, you'll end up with the original number because 9 will disappear. So it's all that manipulation. I'm sorry that the video doesn't say, okay, because the part that tickles my curiosity is, okay, let's get to the good part. Where do I use this? How do I use
that? Well, that, then, Dolly, is that all, you understand all that?
I was right with it. I went ahead and put me on mute and thought, bless his heart, he thought I'd understand that.
Well, I actually wished I had read the article now. I had that art. Well, what happened? No, let me tell you what happened, Walt. We had somebody on Facebook who was talking in terms of, she has a friend and she wants to get them shungite, but they have a cell tower that's in sight. They can see the cell tower. So if you can see it, you're being affected by it. But I was like so amazed because the people that were getting involved in shungite now seem to be able to grasp some of the intricacies that have befuddled even us in the beginning. It's like people are beginning to understand what's really happening with it. They have an intuition developing or whatever. But she realized that if she put the nuggets with the trees, they had a lot of trees around there. She was asking, will that put up enough of a field, you know? And so I read it and I go, well, I don't know. Let me think about this. So I kind of get spacey and all of a sudden I'm seeing 3, 6, and 9. I'm going, oh, okay, 3, 6, and 9. So all of a sudden I get this download and I wrote back and I said, you know, what you need to do is you need to take those 3 nuggets and put 3 nuggets at the base of 3 trees. And I said, it's the 3, 6, 9 that Tesla's talking about. And I'm going like, I don't know what the hell Tesla's talking about. Why am I saying that? You know, so then I Googled Tesla 369. And sure enough, it comes up with that article, you know. And I was like, oh my God, this is just really a good piece of literature. And we'll get more into it, what he says in this thing that was just really pretty amazing. But I never got the chance to be able to really dive into it. So I'm glad to know that there are YouTubes involved in it. But this 369 is one of those, and when you mentioned the fact that, you know, the people in the olden days, they sort of understood the math, you know, it was just, they understood it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way I was when I was a kid. You know, show me geometry or trigonometry or any of it. Just show me what you're trying to do. Show me the equation and what you think it's supposed to do, and I would know it. It was just like, yeah, okay, you know. So I've never had this fascination with mathematics until I met this guy that worked with me in the grenade launching place. And he was from Morocco. And one day we were doing some, trying to figure out some mathematical thingy-mahicky, and all of a sudden I'm going, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm doing the math. And I said, what kind of math is that? And he said, oh, this is the math I was taught as a kid. Now, Walt, there was no way that the way that he was getting number answers conformed to anything I could even imagine. You know, it was like, the Moroccans had a totally different mathematical system. And I don't remember the details of it now. Someplace I wrote it down because it was so amazing. But it wasn't like 2 and 2 is 4, 2 times 2 is 4. It wasn't any of that. It was like, well, if you divide this by this, you're going to get that. Even though we would have done it as a multiplication thing, they were using division. And I just was like, is there nobody else in the world that knows about this math? Because he would invariably, within three, you know, machinations of the math, get the right answer every time. In a more simplistic way than I could even imagine. Didn't make any sense to me how he was getting it.
So
but
it's kind of, so as you can see, your explanation, you're debunking all those who say, oh, it must have been aliens when they did this because there's no way they could have done that building with such precision without a supercomputer. Well, they didn't need a supercomputer. They knew how to do calculations better.
they had a different math, you know, and I think I said to him, I said, this was the math you were taught in college, in high school. He said, yes, it was the only math, excuse me, it was the only math we knew. When he got to America and he had to learn this new mathematical system, he didn't. You know, he just wouldn't let him see him doing the math that he was doing versus what they were doing. Because, you know, I'd run into this, you know, they'd ask a question and I'd give them the answer and they'd go, but how'd you get it? And I'd go, well, not sure. You know, it just came to me. You know, but it was almost like that with him. So there was a different mathematics. And this is probably another hidden science that they've got out there, you know. But back to the 369. What is it? What is the basics of it? I mean, because let's just talk energy. If we take, we know that if we take the three nuggets and put them together, that something else happens because that Curlian photography actually took a snapshot of it. You could see three nuggets of shungite, and you could see their field. But then there was a huge secondary field that was tied in like a triangle thing between the three of them. And so if you, and I knew this because I'd seen it happening, if you take a, you know, one of these threesomes and you have another threesome, these threesomes want to reach out to each other, but it always takes that third. So it's like you need 3, 3, and 3 to be able to get the coherent field of 9, based on 9, which is
The three is the base that you need to make the spiral. Because I was thinking, like you said, in neurology, the principles of energy. And I was thinking of the traditional Slim Sperling light life ring. And it produces, you know, a tensor field inside the plane of the ring, and it produces a perpendicular beam of light. But there's a limitation in the sense that there is two wires, and the organ and the wires are flowing opposite of each other. So you're looking at just two vectors. So you're looking at what you're looking at. You're looking at a flat plane. Yes, there's an energy field there. Yes, it's beneficial. You can use it to energize water. You can use it to purify stones. I'm not demeaning it or discrediting in any way, shape, or form. You know, what I do, most of what I do, I've learned from the principles of Slim Sperling. But that's just it. It's just the two vectors. So when I started thinking of the implosion coils, which are the spirals that you see in the photo, like the turpentine spiral or the Shanghai spirit spiral, you're actually looking at, there's three vectors of flow, because you have the flow, centripetal flow toward the center, because the way I wire make them, the flow is going toward the center. Then there's the circular flow around the vertical axis, and then there's a vertical flow around the circular axis of the coil itself. So it creates a field just like the inner tube of a tire or a donut. So you're looking at three vectors of movement. And that's what you need, you know, to get the spiral going. Because a spiral, it emerges from where? From the circle. So you have two elements. You get a circle. You get a third element. Now the circle begins to express itself in the third dimension, and it goes out as a spiral. And that's the movement of everything. The planets orbiting the sun are not moving in circles. They're moving in a spiral because the sun itself is traveling through space. So that's why it's the foundation of the reality.
Well, I just want to read this, because this was it just unbelievably tickled me, because we continually talk about directed energy weapons, and I continually talk about the fact that our situation with the 9/11 event was essentially it was a DEW that took down the buildings, okay? And I'd say, well, it's because they set up a vibration that was so unbelievably matching the physical molecular structure of the building that it just shook itself apart, right? And this is supposed, DEW is supposed to be this new concept and stuff. Well, I'm just going to read this whole thing because it was so, in many ways, funny. This is actually an excerpt from the New York World Telegram on July 11th, 1935, okay? Nikola Tesla revealed that an earthquake, which drew police and ambulances to the region of his laboratory at 48 East Hudson Street, that was where he was in the hotel, I think, in 1898, was the result, well, no, maybe not, because that was 1898. That was later. The New Yorker was later. Was the result of a little machine he was experimenting with at the time, which you could put in your overcoat pocket. The bewildered newspaper man pounced upon this, at least one thing they could understand, and Nikola Tesla, the father of modern electricity, told what had happened as follows. Tesla stated, I was experimenting with vibrations. I had one of my machines going, and I wanted to see if our ear, something's missing. A statement's missing. Our ears in another few minutes. Okay, I know what it is. The problem is I'm not on, sometimes when you do a PDF, you lose bottoms of the pages.
You want me to go to the article?
I hope I have it up here. Probably not. Yeah, you want to go to it and read it? Do you know where it is?
Okay, yeah. I'll just click on it because I have your email and it has the link for it.
Oh, well, actually, I have the email up too. I've got it.
So you were at the point where the police and ambulances arrived. I told my assistants to say nothing. We told the police there must have been an earthquake. That's all they ever knew about it. You want me to start from the top? The paragraph?
If you want. I'm here now. Okay. I can read it if you want me to.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Read it.
Okay. Okay, so vibration will do anything. It would only be necessary to step up the vibrations of the machine to fit the natural vibration of the building, and the building would come crashing down. That's what why soldiers break step crossing a bridge. Okay, now I actually dropped down in front of the paragraph we were screwing with was, I was experimenting with vibrations. I had one of my machines going and wanted to see if I could get it in tune with the vibration of the building. I put it up a notch after notch. There was a peculiar cracking sound. I asked my assistants, where did the sound come from? They did not know. I put the machine up a few more notches. Yeah, where's the sound coming from? He doesn't know, but he turns it up higher. I love the guy. Oh, let's just see. There was a louder cracking sound. I knew I was approaching the vibration of the steel building. I pushed the machine just a little higher. Suddenly, all the heavy machinery in the place was flying around. I grabbed a hammer and broke the machine. The building would have been about our ears in another few minutes. Outside in the street, there was pandemonium. The police and ambulance arrived. I told my assistants to say nothing. We told the police it must have been an earthquake. That's all they ever knew about it. But then, you know, later on he goes talking about it again, and it's this vibration, okay? So on the occasion of his annual birthday celebration interview by the press on July 10th, 1935, in his suite at the Hotel New Yorker, all right, I was right, Tesla announced a method of transmitting mechanical energy accurately with a minimal loss over any terrestrial distance, including a related new means of communication and a method he claimed which would facilitate the unerring location of underground mineral deposits. At that time, he recalled the earth-trembling quake that brought police and ambulances rushing to the scene of his Houston Street laboratory while the experiment was in progress. Now, one of the things, again, this thing that he could actually look inside the earth, they do that now with this ground-penetrating radar. That's how they do it. They essentially send in a signal, and when that signal hits, like, gold, okay, it sends back another signal that has a signature of gold, and if it's oil, well, then it's going to do that, too. So this guy back in 1935 was talking about things that, you know, we think is new, not new, not new.
Well, I think his choice of shutting off the machine was deliberate. The thing with the hammer. You think about it. He was actually playing with the controls of the machine, right?
Uh huh.
You know, raising it a notch until he hit the sweet spot, the resonant frequency of the entire building. What's to stop him from hitting the power switch or throwing the dial in another, going back the way it came? There's nothing stopping him. I think he was deliberate in destroying it because immediately he understood the potentials. You know, they're going to duplicate this and they can bring down any building they want.
He could have taken down the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But this is exactly how they took the 9/11 buildings down. That's exactly what we're talking about. It's putting up a vibration that, at the molecular level, tears them apart. You know, and one of the things that, and I agree with you, Walt, that he was so astute at what he was doing. He was actually, because of this concept of energies and how you get to a certain point and something else takes off and happens. Right? And mm-hmm. I think that what he realized was that he was in that. We don't really have an appreciation for how much power or energy is out there. It's just mind-bending. And he realized that whatever was in the process of happening, that just like you're saying, it was not, the 3D was losing control of it, even though it was a machine that was doing it. And the only way to stop it was to break the connection, which was the machine, you know, by smacking it with a hammer.
Yeah. I forget the website where I read it, but I do remember reading an article written about the what happened, because I believe that when I'm just trying to grab this. Oh, here it is. For the benefit of our listeners. Okay. Here's a photo of the mechanical oscillator. I'm going to put it in the radio chat so people can get a visual of what it was, as opposed to trying to imagine what it may have been. Okay, so this is one picture of the Tesla mechanical oscillator, electromechanical oscillator. Because it had an electromagnet. That's why he was able, by adjusting the rheostat, which alters the voltage going into the electromagnet, he's able to adjust. It's all analog. This is not the digital age. There are no computers controlling, you know, digital signals. It's all analog. But if you have an electromagnet and you are able to change the voltage going into it, you change the frequency, you know, more, less, and that's what he achieved. Here we go. But what I was going to say is that I remember reading that when he died, he was in a hotel. I don't remember if it was New York, but he passed in a hotel in
it was
in New York.
It was a New Yorker. It was in New York.
Okay. And apparently somebody, I forget if it was the FBI, but somebody from a government agency showed up and confiscated an entire suitcase full of plans and blueprints and patents. So all that technology that was, all that knowledge that all his plans and ideas and everything that he had accumulated was apparently was in a suitcase or more than one
suitcase. It was in travel trunks. You know, like those big steamship travel trunks. There was many of them. Somebody believes that they didn't get them all. But the thing about it is that the man that went through all those papers is a guy by the name of John Trump. It's Donald's uncle.
Oh, okay.
All right. And
so,
he said there was nothing of importance in it.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, but this is why it gets so. I mean, Tesla is just such a central character, and so just think about it. You know, a decade ago, people didn't know who Tesla was until they had the Tesla car. What's Tesla? You know, that's when he began to become sort of renowned, if you will. Yeah, us guys, we knew about him, but the vast majority of people. But Tesla is so funny because when he was in that in that hotel, down in the guts of this hotel, there was a huge amount of power generation equipment that had been put in sort of like as a sale, as a point where they were going to run something. Trains, I don't know what it was. It never seemed to have been actually activated for what the purpose that they had it, but he had access to this most amazing power source. I think that's why he stayed in the New Yorker. There's a whole story about that. But back to the John Trump thing. Dolly's wondering, or somebody's asking about Tesla and time travel. He certainly understood it, Dolly.
Did he do it?
Let me put it to you this way. The real story behind the Philadelphia experiment has Einstein with Tesla. And Newman, who is also, you know, brilliant in his own way, but he's kind of dark. And they started developing this concept that ended up in the Philadelphia experiment, where the USS Eldridge disappeared. I mean, it was, everybody was there in the harbor, and all of a sudden the thing disappeared. But Tesla knew that the technology was going to put a tear in space and time. And so he sabotaged the original experiment that was done in Brooklyn, in the Brooklyn shipping yards, with a much smaller ship. And so they all got there, and they're all ready to do it, and the dang thing failed. But Newman suspected, I guess he was suspicious of Tesla, I'm not sure what it was, but in secret he had had a duplicate made of the same equipment.
And Tesla so, did?
No, not Tesla, Newman, who was the guy that was also there with Einstein and Tesla. And so they did a second one at Brooklyn, which proved that the theory was right, that they were getting invisibility. But then they tried on the Eldridge, and the Eldridge not just went invisible, it completely disappeared. And it proved that Tesla was right. Because out of that experiment, what happened was that they did breach the time-space continuum. And then you get into Al Bellick. Remember Al Bellick? He said that he was on the Eldridge. Him and his brother jumped off the ship when it got all squirrely, and ended up in what was it? 20 years in the future? Was it 20 years?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I think it was 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that's when they met Newman again, because when they got picked up by the military, you know, and they're taken to essentially the beginnings of Montauk. And, well, Montauk was already working at that time. And Newman was there, right? The guy that was on the ship. I mean, that was back in the time they had just left. But Newman saw it happen, and Newman realized that Tesla was right. They had ripped a fabric in time. And so that really set into motion the Montauk project that was very much involved in time travel. So the question as to whether or not Tesla actually time traveled in the 3D, you know, I don't think so. But he absolutely had concepts of what it was. And it was proven that that what happened was that the Eldridge, okay, in Newport, where is it? It's not Rhode Island. No, Newark. The Newark shipping yards, okay? While the experiment was going on, okay, there was two places in time in the future. One of them was at the shipping yard. The other one was in the middle of the Atlantic. And in both cases, while the experiment's going on, the Eldridge was identified as being in a berth in Newark and being seen by a convoy in the middle of the Atlantic.
Was that in the same time?
The same time.
Or was that... Oh.
While
it was in two places at the same time?
It showed up in two different places. It disappeared from Philadelphia, but it appeared in two different places on the planet at the same time the experiment was being run.
Oh, I didn't realize that was at the same time.
At the same time. But the thing of it is that researchers went back and said, well, did the Eldridge ever at any point in time show up in that berth, that particular berth number, whatever it was, and was it ever in the Atlantic to be seen? And they proved that, yes, it was berthed there at one point, you know, after the Philadelphia experiment, because the Eldridge wasn't even in the inventory when they did this. It was about to be commissioned, and before they got it commissioned, they did this experiment. But after it was commissioned, it did end up in that berth in Newark. And then it also was at that location in the Atlantic. It was a major place that the Eldridge had been. So, you know, but the more you learn about Tesla and what he knew, and when you realize that the science that he had that they wouldn't pay any attention to after the fact is what's still driving so much of this. These DEW weapons are obviously based on Tesla. You know, it's a phenomenon. Who was this guy? Who is this guy?
Where did he come from?
And where did he go?
Yes.
You know? Well, when you, I remember reading the anecdote of when he conceived of alternating electricity, what we use today in our homes. And here's the thing is that, yes, it is important to have dialectic knowledge of something so that you can interpret information when it comes to you. For example, if I were proficient in Mandarin Chinese, someone would come to me and start speaking their ideas, but I would have the knowledge to be able to interpret them. So I would be able to understand, okay, this person is asking me directions how to get to the theater, for example. But just following along those lines, the thing with Tesla is that, yes, his technical knowledge was of paramount importance, but it wasn't like knowing a language. It was important so that he could interpret what he was getting. Because in the esoteric field, and my father had a ton of esoteric books, and when I ask Dr. Costa about it, he says, yes, it does exist. That you know when you do a shamanic journey and you go into other realms, in the books they document there's a place, I don't know if it's an astral place or an etheric place, and they call it the Hall of Inventions. And I've only seen it once in a shamanic journey, and thankfully I didn't bring anything back, because everything that has been is and will be is there. If you have the technical knowledge to interpret what you're seeing, you can actually bring it back. And that's exactly what he did, because when he was the way I remember reading the story, he was in a park and he was walking with a friend and they were in a conversation, and all of a sudden he's walking with a friend, and I think it was the friend who was talking, but all of a sudden in front of him he sees these rotating magnetic fields. And he gets a notion of an electromagnet rotating and going over, you know, the necessary coils that would grasp this. So as soon as he got home, he sat down and he made a sketch. So because of his intense and very intuitive technical knowledge, he saw this vision and he was able to materialize it. He was able to sit down and make it into something workable. So what I'm trying to get to is that a lot of what he made, yes, of course, there's no way that you can question his intelligence or his genius, but it's not an invention based on knowledge. It's something that was grasped and channeled and made into what it was because he pulled it in from the higher dimension, from where it already exists. So,
well, Edison would do the same thing.
Yeah, he would go into his divan and go to sleep.
He'd go to sleep, and he'd wake up. And now he made a lot of failures. Edison said that you know, every failure taught him what not to do. But you know, very often he would just get a certain. It's almost like he had enough information. Now he's got to put it together, right? And so he'd take a nap, and he'd come back, and he'd know. And Tesla, on the other hand, just seemed to know. And why I'm kind of like interested in this, why I'm being led to this, I think, is because I think that this same process of just knowing is, like you say, a gift that human beings have.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has it. We think only a few, select few have it, and that's not true.
it's exactly it. What he would do is he would pay attention to the imaginings and then build something from what he saw.
Edison or Tesla?
Okay. Well, Edison would
too. So didn't even go to sleep. He was seeing things wide awake.
Oh, he never slept. Tesla.
Tesla?
Tesla hardly ever slept. They said that he didn't sleep more than a couple to 4 hours a day.
Wow.
So the guy was sleep deprived.
Yeah.
Which meant that his 3D brain was too tired to put in all the talk, in my opinion. That he had a clear brain.
Well, unless he was from a different place and didn't need that much sleep.
Well, that's true, but I think that I don't want to underestimate the fact that we have people out there showing us potentials that we have. You know, we want to say, well, he must have been attacked. The ETs must have been telling him. Maybe not. Maybe this isn't, because, Dolly, some of the stuff that they were able to do with these buildings that they can't explain how they were built, because they were using sound to move them.
It's okay. I was just throwing that out there.
No, I know that. But I mean, I think that what's happening is that as we get into this area, and we need to talk about that too, that veil in the middle of the solar system, that one that started us on in the email, Walt.
Well, it's not in the solar system. It's actually, it spans the galaxy. It's light years.
The galaxy, yes. 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 I'm sorry. But I think that a lot of this knowledge that as we get into this area, the proton belt, or this area where we've got more and more energy, and we know that our DNA is changing, it happens every 25,000 so much years that we go through this area with this excess amount of energy that then causes us to accelerate a development with the planet and with the animals and with the people. And that it's sort of like it is that spiral thing, because there's also the indigenous peoples almost always have part of their concept of reality is a black sun. They're always talking about a black sun. I kept going, what are they talking about? Well, it turns out that there is a black sun in the middle of every galaxy, i.e. a black hole. Or, you know, but I think when they say the black sun, they see this. They had seen this. They knew it.
Who are they?
The indigenous people that don't have any technical knowledge at all. Okay. That is part of who we are. But over the, you know, millennia, they've been able to tell us we don't know this stuff. Why is it that I can look at something and say, gee, Walt, I'm seeing, you know, that there's 6 fullerenes in this piece of nugget? You know, how do I have that ability? You know, I think it's an ability we all have, that we have superpowers. And we get people like Tesla who come along and they just are, you know, but he was sleep deprived. So his brain didn't have all of the chatter in it. And he wasn't a social guy. He didn't go out and, you know, date and drink and all that. That wasn't him. So if you can clear your mind out, you might be like Tesla.
Well, and the thing is that it's another confirmation of when Anastasia says in the Meg Ray books that man has access to all the knowledge in the universe, it just depends on what you're tuning into. In the case of Tesla, he's tuning into all this technology. There are other examples throughout history. For example, one of my mother's cousins is an orchestra conductor in Argentina, so he's been playing music, performing music, composing music for decades. And he told me a little bit about the story about the history of Mozart, for example. And he says that, you know, Mozart was taught music by his father, because his father was a musician and a music teacher. And the father was astounded, because when the little boy started writing music, because Mozart would always say when he would sit down and write music, it was already finished in his head. That's the way that he would say. He noticed that the boy had no errors in harmony. When he would sit down and write, the piece was already done. Because many times when you see composers working on a piece, they go back and they correct. Because, you know, music is not only about sound, it's also about timing. And sometimes there are errors and syncopation and all the things that have to do with music. And they go back and they edit their work until the piece comes out the way they intended. That's not the case with Mozart. When he would, it was like he wasn't composing. He was just pulling it out of the ether. It was already finished. All he had the knowledge to tune into that. The same way that you grab your radio and you can tune into this station that has classic music, or you tune into that station that has rock and roll oldies, is the same thing. We have that power in us to tune in. Okay, what is it that you want to learn about? What is it that you want to study? Okay, tune into it with complete conviction, zero doubt that you, and you get it, because that's the way of a law of attraction works. The problem is, if I tune into something I have no translation for, like if I tune into something I've never touched, a discipline I've never seen, the knowledge will come to me, but I have no way of translating it into my reality because I don't have the basis. That's where education comes in. So Mozart was able to pull it out and manifest it, put it on paper, because his father taught him music. He had the language with which to interpret this data stream. And here, you know, Tesla had all this technical education and knowledge, so he was able to interpret that stream of information and bring it into the material world. And the same thing goes for everything else. If you have the language to understand what you're looking at, then you can pull whatever you want out of the vacuum, out of the quantum field, and bring it into the reality.
So they pulled it out knowingly. They pulled it out on purpose.
I think so too. Plus, Tesla was altruistic because his drive was always to, you know, help the world and help humanity and give people free power. He was never moved by money. Unfortunately, when you look at the historical context of the time where he lived, you know, the cabal is running 99% of the planet and everything is money and everything is corruption and every, you know, worse than now, because back then everything was practically an absolute secret. Now all the crap is coming to the surface for people to see and appreciate and evaluate.
To me, it's fascinating because I just feel like I feel like we're on the brink of something really, really, really big. And it's going to happen in the people. I already see it in the animals. You know, you didn't hear this, but maybe, well, Dolly probably did. This woman wrote us in Facebook because she had just gotten the shungite. She was had it all, you know, around the house, and she had put it where the cat likes to lay, and you know, and she gets a telephone call, and she's brand new to shungite. She gets a telephone call, and it's a telemarketer, and so she decides that she's going to try to reason with a telemarketer, and she's like, you know, you're this is my privacy. I don't want you using my phone. And the guy was kind of getting belligerent, and you know, and she said that she notices her cat. She started watching the cat, and the cat gets up and starts doing something. She's not sure what. And then he comes over to her, and he gets right in front of her, and he spit out 3 shungite nuggets. What a statement. This guy needs shungite. You need shungite. You're getting upset, you know. But it was like the animal knew. Okay? Another cat, the woman, again, these new people are just really funny because they come up with some stories. This new thing, you know, and she knows, okay, I'm supposed to put 3 nuggets in the cat's dish, okay? So she does. And then a little bit later, she looks at the bowl, glances at it, and she notices that one of the nuggets is on the outside of the bowl. And she goes, oh, that's interesting. And she goes to put it back in the bowl, and then realized there were 3 nuggets in the bowl. She had put 4 instead of 3, but the cat knew the difference. I mean, well, how do you explain this, you know?
Well, look at the bees. Who told them it was good? That instead of pushing it out and cleaning their hive, they actually walk all over it. Nobody taught. What school did they go to learn? No school.
Well, maybe the shungite talked to them and they heard it. Like I hear Mr. Turtle, Mr. Spiral. Speaking of Mr. Turtle, well, Mr. Turtle is wonderful. He, when I was in the water today in the pool, the water felt like silk. It felt like silk. I was all wrapped up in silk, and you know how soft that is. He's just fantastic. Thank you for making Mr. Turtle.
Nancy, it sounds like we should get royalties for this stuff.
I think you should.
Well, congratulations, Dolly, for having like the best pool in Florida.
Yes, I agree.
I said, I think it was, I don't even know who it was, but I said, someday there's going to be an institute that all it does is study shungite, and I want to enroll. You know what I'm saying? There are so many different things about it. But no, the concept of three. Because everybody, well, not everybody, but the concept of the shungite grid and how people are putting their places and where they've been with the shungite on the maps, you know, mm-hmm. It's very, very popular. And Derek has now developed this little glass thing. It's real small, but it's got shungite in it. And I suppose he's probably got I don't know what he's charging for, probably not much. And he's telling people, take this, go to the ocean, and as this tide is going out, throw it. We're going to put these new bottles, you know, bottles in, message in a bottle. And in the little capsule is water. Because he started the conversation talking about a new orgon device based on water. I said, what are you talking about? So he's got the metal in there. He's got the, granules, you know, the bigger pieces of powder, the bigger type of powder, and then the powder and S4 powder. And, he's probably thrown in some of that silver, cosmic silver powder. And you didn't say it, but he always puts a couple grains in everything. And also, those little round eye hooky thing. Well, it's a stainless steel he's getting in there for the orgon movement. And, you know, the idea of just going out and throwing these things in the water is really neat. But when you're on ground, when you're in the ground, you know, on putting things out, I think you should always put them out in threes. You put a pile of threes and you do it three times. Because it's like one, you know how you get things in your head? You know, 369, 369, you know? And basically now they're doing 39, 39, 39, you know? And so that seems to be a real marker of coherent field. And if you're doing this, then you're essentially asking the tree and the shungite weave to make even a more powerful connection. Do you understand that, what I'm saying there, Walt? And Dolly, too. Dolly would understand that. Mm-hmm. So,
Well, yeah. It also goes back to explain why is it that a pinch of powder is far, far more powerful than a 5-ton boulder of shungite? How many threes do you have in there when you have millions and millions of particles?
Right, and that, and every time you make these connections, it's influencing the other dimensions, the other layers of energies. It has to, you know, by the concept of resonance and vibrational.
And it's filling the collective consciousness because
precisely.
Dr. Costa gave an example of it when he was teaching the 15-step process. He told the story of the very first experience of it when he was doing a transpersonal hypnotherapy session with a patient. And the patient experienced the 15-step staircase. So he said, okay, go ahead and go up the stairs. And at the top of the stairs, this woman found her spiritual guides. And he says that was the very first experience. But in the beginning, because so very few people had done it, maybe this one lady here, another person there, it really took a while to get the person in that state of consciousness to get them to experience it correctly. He says, but as more and more people did it, they're putting the knowledge and the awareness of it in the collective. So by the time I attended the workshop, it was very easy. It was fairly easy to get to the 15th step and to witness the stair, and you could describe the stair because since so many people had done it, it's already part of the database. It's now in the collective. So you tune into what is being explained to you, and you can just grab it because it's already there. So that's all it takes, is one person to be, you know, the beginning, you know, to start the ball rolling. And then as more people get into it, they're feeding the collective with this awareness. And as soon as you say the word Shanghai, then they're thinking, oh, Shanghai, what? Oh, and that's it. All those orbs of information are just flowing to them because they're in the collective. It's not like nobody is doing it.
Right. And you know, I look at, well, let's we're at the top of the hour, so let's just take a break here. But when we come back, let's talk about the 100th monkey. Derek and I talked about it. But I think that we want to talk about, that's why they talk about the 100th monkey. Okay, I'll talk about the 100th monkey. We'll be right back, 4 minutes.
In the
And welcome back to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, April 23rd, 2019. My name's Nancy Hopkins. With me is Walter Silver. Walter Silver. What are they? Walt Silver. I got a piece of candy in my mouth. Sorry, Walter. I've kept him on mute so he can't talk back to me. I'm unmuting you now. Hi, Dolly. And Dolly Howard is with us.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Walt. Walt Silver. Walter Silver is a singer, or maybe, oh my God, that was too funny.
Is a Walter Silver?
Oh my God, yes.
Oh.
somehow or another, I tripped over a singer on YouTube that's named Walt Silver. And he's a Spanish guy. Talking about love and mama and, oh my goodness. And I guess maybe, well, I don't know, you might not remember, but on one of the shows, at the break time, I played this song. I thought it was hysterical, but I don't think Walt thought it was quite as funny.
Oh.
Is that what you were playing during the break? Because I wasn't here during the break?
Not this time, but, you know, this was like a couple of years ago.
Oh.
I'll try to find it so I can play it for Dolly.
Yeah.
All right, I'm chewing this candy because I can't keep trying to get rid of it. All right, it's gone. Now I'm washing it down.
What kind of candy was it?
This orange thing.
Oh.
I had to put the get the cat's bowl ready for him because the food's cold, so it needs to be warm before I serve it to him.
Oh my gosh.
So I had to put it in a bowl and while I was there, the candy was just saying, "Hey, don't you want me?" And I'm going, "Yeah, sure." And then I put my mouth and I went, "Oh, wait a minute, I'm on radio."
Not that she spoils her cats or anything, but she warms their food.
No, I don't warm it. I just take it out of the refrigerator so that it's room temperature.
Oh, I thought you were warming it.
No.
These cats that you didn't want, that you just love to pieces now.
Well, yesterday the yard guy was here, and he had to work out where their catio is.
Yeah.
They were not happy campers.
Because
they couldn't be in their catio. So, and I think that they didn't get enough running around about there or whatever, because this morning I hear this crash and I go back there and they tore that room apart. They dumped over a big carrier of theirs that you could put a small dog in that just happens to be there. How they dumped that over, I don't know. But anyway, so today it's been a beautiful day here.
And, gorgeous here.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they've been out there almost all day. I gave the dog a bath the other day. And they were just sitting there watching me. I mean, they probably have done it before. I just didn't notice them, you know. But this time I noticed them, and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder what they're saying. Oh, what's she doing? What's she doing to that dog? I think they call it washing. She's not going to do it to us. You know, and I'm so kept myself amused while I washed the dog, thinking about what the cats were talking about. You have to exercise your imagination. If you don't exercise your imagination,
that's right,
you won't be able to build things that cause earthquakes.
That's right.
Like our friend
Tesla. I exercise mine all day long.
Yeah. So, Tesla. My gosh, that guy just, he's so much fun. But it's going to be, because, you know, at one point, Donald Trump made a statement regarding someday that everything would change, like virtually overnight, because of the technology that's really available. He actually alluded to technology that, you know, probably his Uncle John told him about.
Is this before or after he started with supposedly supporting the 5G?
Oh, no, this was when he was still not even presidential candidate, I don't think.
Oh, okay. Just wondered.
Yeah. I don't know what he's doing there.
I don't either. I listened to some guy on a a video talking about that, why Trump is supporting 5G and why it's not a bad thing. And the guy kept saying certain words over and over and over, which I've forgotten now. And he never did say, at least I don't think he ever said, why he thought Trump was saying that. It was just, it was irritating. And then when I got done listening to it, I thought, why the heck didn't you just turn that sucker off? I thought about sending it to you, but to see what you thought about it. But then I thought, oh no, I bet he'll drive Nancy crazy too.
Well, I will.
We're hypnotizing you, huh?
One thing we do need to talk about, Walt. Our friends over at Purple Power and their C60 lab stuff. You know, we basically left them alone. But somebody sent me a video. I think it was one of Sarah Westall's videos. I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, it was. And this guy, Ken, I think they call him. I don't know.
Yeah, Mr. Shorts.
Right. He was talking about how Shungite is, his C60 will protect them from 5G.
Okay.
What?
Yeah.
And, is he serious?
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh.
And she, thank God, said, you know, this is where I want you to listen now, 34 minutes in or something. And so I go there, and the first thing he says is, well, you know, this 5G, if it's really bad, well, then the telecommunication companies will all be sued. And apparently he doesn't know that, A, they can't be sued, and B, the insurance companies won't pay for any damage, health damage done because of Wi-Fi, radio frequency, any of it. Scourgeon 32, and it's in every one of your health insurance policies now. So apparently he didn't know that. And so, okay, so then the next point was, I don't even remember what it was, but it was likewise. Oh, yes. And if you got too close to it, the only thing that would happen is that you would have minor skin burn. That's non-ionizing BS that they have, you know. Well, it's non-ionizing, so it won't go beyond your skin. Not true. But then he said, let me see if I can get this right, because it kind of like doesn't want to stay in my mind. It's so weird. He said that if you took, you know, that stuff that they put on windows of cars that block out the light, you know, that film stuff. Yeah,
the polarizing film.
Right. That if you put that in front of you, that you won't be hit with 5G.
Oh, jeez.
So he's making suits out of it, so you walk around like an astronaut?
You know, and meanwhile, I'm about to projectile vomit. Just because it's such BS and because I don't like the energy off of any of that Purple Power stuff. And so I went back to the person and I said, well, I only got very short wet boy in it, but I'm not going to puke, so I'm not going to listen to it because I don't want to puke. And this is the three things that he's already said that are absolutely ludicrous. So, people, if you are hearing that C60 is going to protect you from 5G, no. Sorry. Nothing's going to protect you from 5G. We're actually doing a show on Wednesday at noontime, myself and Michael Henry Dunn. And Mark Steele is coming back from Britain, because what's happening is that supposedly educated, knowledgeable people are continuing to make these claims that are absolutely bogus. And so I said, Mark, would you come on and we'll take on the claims that are, you know, that the mainstream media is pushing. They're trying to push it to people so that people think, oh, it's not, these people are crazy that think this is going to kill us. It's not going to kill us. Yes, it is. So anyway, it should be a very good show. And
And that is tomorrow.
Yep.
Right?
On Radio 5G. But you get that by going to 5GKNOW.com. No, 5GKNOW.com. Or you go to Cosmic Reality Radio and you drop down the, where it says radio, just hover over it and it drops down a list and you'll see 5G radio.
Or and it is from noon to 2, right?
Eastern Standard Time.
Eastern Standard Time, right.
Yep, thank you.
You're welcome.
And it'll be in the archives. All our archives from last week are up, by the way. Yeah, it's... The 5G thing is a very, but it's also, I mean, there's so many other things that, that are occurring at the same time. It's not just the 5G. Robert Kennedy's getting much more vocal. I mean, out there in, than he used to be. He was always vocal. He was always talking about pharmaceutical, you know, terrible stories about what the vaccines and pharmaceutical companies do. But, maybe he's gotten too old, gotten old enough that he feels like he's not going to die young, because he's out there in their faces. You know, Robert Kennedy Jr. He actually went out in a press conference recently and said to Monsanto some very, very libelous and damning things if he was lying, and he said, you know, he said, "Come on, sue me. Come on, sue me." You know, because you think, you know you can't. What I'm telling you is the truth. Mm-hmm. And then back in I think it was first of the year, not that we're that far from the first of the year, but he went out and he started talking about the pharmaceutical companies. And, you know, let me just take the time to give him the respect to read this. He said, "Those of you who have been involved in the past in the battle to protect our children from poorly made vaccines or toxic chemicals in our food or in our water know the power of these industries and how they have undermined every institution in our democracy that is supposed to protect little children from powerful, greedy corporations. Even the pharmaceutical companies have been able to purchase Congress. They're the largest lobbying entity in Washington, D.C. They have more lobbyists in Washington, D.C. than there are congressmen and senators combined. They give twice to Congress what the next largest lobbying entity is, which is oil and gas. Imagine the power they exercise over both Republicans and Democrats. They've captured them, our regulatory agencies, and turned them into sock puppets. They've compromised the press, and they destroyed the publications that publish real science." You know, I mean, it's like people are really stepping up in so many different areas and pushing back now. And again, it's another indication that I think we've passed the 100th monkey.
Well, I heard a program just yesterday saying how they're putting, they're running out of the pure drugs stuff. And so they're putting poison in our drugs now that are prescription drugs. What are you laughing about, Walt?
You can't see the comedy of it? They're replacing one poison with another poison? Oh, come on. That's hilarious.
Oh, I didn't see that. Nope.
It's insane. But it's just looking more insane to more and more people. So I think, and the 100th monkey thing is basically a 3D manifestation that showed us when 200 miles away, the same species of monkey on the same day began to wash potatoes. But that was because there was British scientists watching them, and they washed the potatoes because the British were washing the potatoes. And on another island 200 miles away, the Japanese scientists looking at the same monkeys, and they didn't know about the other one. This is back in the 60s. They were eating rice, so they didn't even get into washing the potatoes. But one day, all of a sudden, all the island monkeys in the Japanese island just started washing potatoes. And it was when the British published their research paper that the Japanese realized why that happened. But it was the 100th monkey. And the reason that I brought that up to right now, Walt, was for a lot of reasons, but because you were the one, remember when we were doing that thing with Dolly, something with Dolly, and you said that 40,000 other people had changed their frequency because of that? And
changed the experience, impacted, at least that's the number that I got, 40,000 people.
Well, I checked with my guides, and I got the same thing, that's true. It's about 40,000. Uh-huh. It's some mathematical thing, probably based on 3, 6, and 9. But, you know, so if you take 40,000 and you realize that one person who gets it, you know, and makes a frequency change, actually cause a frequency change due to 3D resonance, never mind anything concerning real, you know, quantum or dimensional energies. This is just, you know, basic 3D enterology, that, boom, the thing started to just mushroom out. 40,000 every time somebody has done this. You can see why, you know, the 100th monkey syndrome could be well underway. I just think we're going to wake up, you know, in a very short period of time.
And the thing is that there's, to add more confirmation to what you're saying, is the fact that Anelia Benz, in her book, Interview with a Psychic Assassin, that is exactly the role the psychic assassin was given to play. Her job was to scan the collective. And it didn't matter where in the world the person was. As soon as she started noticing somebody waking up from the masses, her job was to assassinate that person, because that one person waking up was going to impact thousands of people around him or her. That was her job, to keep, you know, keep the herd asleep. And she gave that job up. So if that were not true, why train somebody to do specifically that? Think about it. You know, isn't that a waste of time and energy, just killing random people that are waking up? They don't matter. It's just one in a million or a billion. Because they matter. They matter so much, we have to get rid of them.
Well, that's what I think is so very, very interesting about the internet. And, you know, having the ability like we do to just talk about anything we want and to put it out there in our own consciousness, which then bleeds into the subconscious and the superconsciousness. And it just, you know, it's like a virus of thought, a thought form that keeps growing bigger and bigger, because more and more people, you know about Shanghai, for instance, you know about Tesla, know about, you know, we're just growing in leaps and bounds. And the people that come to us now on the Facebook, Shanghai Reality, the group, they're doing some amazing things. Not like you do. But they're getting there. They're using their intuition.
Well, did you ask your group if what I got was accurate, or was it just imagination on my part? On that email that I sent you regarding Shanghai and what it is, you get confirmation?
Well, yes, it's confirmation, but it's one of those. Okay, the question. What was the question you asked me? Well, to tell them what the statement was, and you were questioning its validity.
Well, the thing is that many times when I'm working on a subject and I want to know more or learn more or something, I'll go to sleep repeating an affirmation or a question or something that pertains to that. So it's a really basic practice, and over the years it has helped me, because it either induces a lucid dream where I'll get information about what I'm trying to find out, or a regular dream, and then I'll start researching if it's what I saw or heard is true or not. So I did that. It wasn't specific about Shanghaite, but in the morning when I woke up, I realized that I was like talking under my breath, saying, Shanghaite is the goo of the galaxy. And I thought, why am I saying this? So then I pulled out the pendulum and asked the question, you know, is it? And just because I asked, the concept itself didn't, this makes no sense to me, but I do know that just like Earth is a living being, I know the galaxy is a living being. So I grabbed the pendulum and the chart and I said, well, the Earth possesses a fluid, an intelligent fluid that's part of her body. Humans call it black goo. Is Shanghai the goo of the galaxy? So
what's goo?
We've had radio shows where we've talked about it extensively. There are parts in the world where scientists that don't have the best of intentions have extracted from very great depths in the earth a substance that looks like petroleum, you know, the oil, what gets drilled to make, you know, fuel for cars and whatnot. And they call it black goo because it's not exactly oil. And the thing is that it is intelligence. It is conscious. It does react to.
So you're saying goo, G-O-O?
Exactly.
Oh, I thought you were saying G-O-A-L. I apologize.
No. That's what they call it. So I'm asking the question with the pendulum and the chart. I said, you know, the Earth possesses this black fluid that belongs to her, that's conscious and aware, and it's part of her body. Does the galaxy have something akin to that? And I got, yes. Well, is Shanghai because the thing is that the galaxy, the same way that you have petroleum under the Earth, the galaxy itself has gigantic clouds of dust. They call it, you know, cosmic dust. They're so vast and so large. They're light years across. And it's the reason why on Earth you can see the arms of the galaxy, but you can't with the naked eye see the center of the galaxy, because you should be able to see, you know, you have the center that's chock full of stars. At night, and a clear sky in the mountain, you know, where there's no smog, you should be able to see this big clump of stars somewhere in the sky. You know, that's the center of the galaxy. But we can't. We see the arm of the galaxy, but where the center should be, there's just a few stars sprinkled here and there. And that's because there's a gigantic cloud of dust, they call it cosmic dust, between us and the galactic center. And there are scientists that have spent a lot of time researching it and analyzing it. Fred Hoyle with Chandra Wickramasinghe, an Indian scientist, wrote a book called Life Cloud. At the time that they did this, they were not aware of fullerenes. So when they did a spectroscopic analysis of the cloud, they found huge chains of carbon. So in their lack of knowledge, they interpreted that they were seeing this, the signature of cellulose. So they were reasoning that the materials of life have not sprung up from the primordial soup of Earth. There's a very great chance that it came up in interstellar space, because here they are detecting these huge chains of carbon in this cloud. So all of this information led me to ask, so if the galaxy has this, is this the equivalent of the black goo on Earth? Is Shanghai goo of the galaxy? And I got a yes. So I said, okay, I better check with Nancy, see what she gets, and my imagination or something else.
Do you have a picture of that so that they can? The email. If you can post
that one that I sent you is one cloud, but it's not the cloud. The cloud, whether you don't realize it or not, I mean, for those people that have been able to see the arm of the galaxy on very clear nights, or someone who lives far away from cities where there's very little smog and you can actually see the stars, when you look up, you can see the arm of the galaxy extending. I've seen it when I've been in southern hemisphere. But where the center should be, you don't see it. It's like, you know, where's the center? You know, why there's an arm of the galaxy here, you can see it. It practically spans the sky, but where's the center? And the thing is, the first time I read about this was in the book 1-2-3 Infinity by a scientist named George Gamow. It's a really fascinating book, and it's made up of a multitude of the different chapters deal with different things. And in one specific chapter, he talks about the cosmic dust cloud that doesn't let us see the center of the galaxy with the naked eye. You can see the center of the galaxy with infrared telescopes and radio telescopes, and they have, you know, images of it, but not with the naked eye, not with a telescope. And it turns out that when I had that shamanic journey that I wanted to see, okay, how did Shungite originate and why is it only one place on Earth? That's the information that I got. It did not form on Earth. It formed in interstellar space, and it was precipitated and brought to the Earth. Who did it or how or what intelligence? I don't know. And that's why it's so prevalent in just one spot on the Earth. It should be like silicon. There's not a single spot anywhere in the Earth where there is no silicon. It's so abundant. It's all over the Earth. But not this thing.
Well, yeah, to answer your question regarding, you know, what I saw, it's yes, the answer is sort of yes, but you used the word Shungite, okay? And it's not so much that Shungite is, it's that meshing that carbon that comes in, okay, that cosmic carbon that's sitting there, you know, the Shungite came out of that. But
correct, and it also would explain to me, in my mind, it explains why you can't use it for harmful work, negative work, because that's exactly what happened with the Goo of Earth. When they tried to weaponize it, the people trying to commit suicide in the weirdest ways, it protected itself. And we see that in Shungite. You can't use it for black magic or try to hurt someone or control someone.
Well, you have to have a heart frequency that will even turn it on, in my opinion.
Exactly.
You know, but the reason why Shungite is specific to Earth, because Shungite took a specific route to get to Earth. And every route is different. Every route pulls in different cosmic energies.
Mm-hmm.
But the basic fundamental structure, that carbon, sheets of carbon, it's fullerenes, okay? It's the C60s. Well, and it's actually the C70s and some of the others too. But this pocket of these fullerenes is like a 3D, it's almost like it's a 3D version of the quantum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so prevalently locked in the center of the galaxy. Every galaxy has the same sort of situation. But they're all going to be slightly different once they leave. It's a perfect molecule. When it leaves, it's perfect. But as it goes through the cosmos and it picks up other dust and other things, and, you know, it goes to Earth, and it's specifically Shungite now. You're not going to find Shungite on Mars. You're not going to find Shungite anyplace else. So you might find versions very close to it, but that special uniqueness of Shungite is unique to the galaxy and the universe, just like each and every one of us are. So that was what they really wanted to get across to me.
Oh, okay. Which would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Shungite's got everything in the periodic table that you need to build everything. That's the basic thing that they sent, you know. And I do believe that it was the consciousness of Gaia that said, "I want to do more." And you know how the universe is. You want to do more? Well, okay, here it is. Here you got, and this comes about from understanding that, you know, when we go out there and we're trying to spread Shungite, we run into people that just don't have the faintest ability to comprehend what we're saying to them. It's not their fault. It's just the way that they're, you know, been programmed. So what you want to do is you still want to put them in a, let's say, a beneficial environment where all of the things that they would need to become energetically together again is there, is to think of them in a Shungite fullerene. and then leave it up to their soul themselves whether they access that or not. So you're not essentially, you know, dishing the free will concept. You're just making an environment that is going to be, you know, conducive to getting yourself healthy. And you don't have to know what's happening. It's just there. It's a decision by you and your soul whether to, but the energies are all there. Because how many times have, you know, somebody really had an energetic healing when they got a stone? Well, it's because mm-hmm. that energy wasn't in their bioelectromagnetic field. They needed that energy. And that's why shungite has such an amazing universal appeal, because it's got every single energy. I mean, that's not just me or you saying this. This is also Andrew Bartzis, who, you know, read the...
Which is absent in laboratory-made crap.
Exactly.
It has to be said out loud because it's the truth. It's not being made up. The laboratory-made stuff, the same thing goes... I think I mentioned it in the previous show. If you buy laboratory-made vitamin E, the body doesn't absorb it. That's why you have to watch out when you look at the ingredients. Vitamin E is, the technical name is D-alpha-tocopherol. It ends with an O-L. That's natural. D-alpha-tocopherol, I-L, is laboratory-made, and you're just wasting your time because your body is going to expel it the same way you took it in. It does not break it down. It does not accept it. Vitamin E, when you do a litmus test on natural vitamin E from a lemon or an orange, it makes a perfect starburst image on the sensitive paper, the litmus paper. When you do the same test with laboratory-made vitamin C, nothing. It just makes a blotch that doesn't have any specific shape. It's just a deformed blotch because vitamin C contains the energy of the sun. So the same thing, your laboratory made fullerenes, they're just empty cans empty. There's nothing in them. They were birthed in a laboratory.
Exactly. And it also goes to understanding the concept of the quantum entanglement, you know, because they've gotten so smart, they started to, they found some scientists that are looking at how many fullerenes are actually in shungite. And, oh, there's not many of them. When did you first hear me talking about that, Walt? Gee, well, there's not very many of them in there. But you don't need the fullerene in every nugget because they're tied together at this really quantum... They're still tied to that field, that dust thing that we can't see the rest of the... Who knows what's on the other side of it, Walt? Just because we're we can see so far to this, you know, this thing that stops our vision, we don't know that the galaxy goes on beyond that. Maybe that's the end of the galaxy for us. Maybe there's something else on the other side.
Oh, wow. Are you saying we're living on a flat galaxy?
Exactly. Well, I don't know if
I will fall off.
No, I think of it as a doorway.
Uh-oh. See what you did? You woke up, darling.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway,
we're living on a flat earth?
No.
Making a joke.
He was making a joke.
Oh, okay. Oh. All right, I can go back to sleep.
No, stay awake, okay, because what time is it? Well, we have time to read Fulford. Do you upset Dolly when you sent her that Fulford thing?
Oh, you're such a tattletale.
No, I thought you guys would appreciate how it's funny that he has a different take. I mean, I know you guys, and I trust that you've seen what you've seen from the other side about what the attack, who was doing the attacking and why. So I don't question that at all. But I found it interesting that he had a different take on it, but the result is the same. I thought that was interesting that he has another take, that is the bad guys who did it, but the result is the same.
You're talking about the Notre Dame attack.
Exactly. Oh. The result is the same. They end up shooting themselves in the foot.
Okay, I want you to can you go and look and see where that part is? We don't need to hear the rest of it because we really are. Okay, but yeah. I want to say something to you because I don't know if you saw it or not. And Dolly, I don't know if you saw it or not. But you know where I showed you guys, and it's actually in the promo from last week when we discussed it about the and Walt thought it looked like the Black Knight, which I agree with, but it came out in. Was there for 3 minutes, and then the fire starts. And this is absolutely positively, you were questioning, Walt, whether or not it was real. And I said, well, I had a remote before, while it was happening that said that was happening, and now we've got a picture of it, so I'm assuming it was not Photoshopped, it's real. Well, then the guy that had put together that first piece, he went back, and he actually put together a second video that shows where he got this information from. And it was a camera on a, I believe, a hotel, and it was taking a picture of the square, you know, the plaza, and the Eiffel Tower in the background every minute. So, he shows the timestamps and the single photographs. He put it into video, but you can see it. This is the most documented case of a UFO that I have ever come across. You know, I mean, it's amazing because it's there in photographs. Now, I don't know that it's an ET ship at all. I think it, to be honest with you, the same energy signature where I feel that this thing came from is the same group of people that took the nuclear missile out from hitting Hawaii.
So you don't think that it's not ET so much as the humans that have the secret space program?
Correct. Because, you know, when Michael asked me, I said, the good guys, you know, and he said, well, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, E.T., because what I was seeing was something that is more associated with an E.T. sighting, you know, but I didn't feel comfortable saying E.T., but I didn't know at the time. You know, because I was doing other things. But later on, when I looked at it again, I said, oh, those are our guys.
I got the section, so let me know when you want me
okay,
to.
Okay, yeah, go.
Okay. The sacrificial burning of Notre Dame Cathedral to Moloch, and in parentheses he puts the names Baal, Set, and Satan, was a desperate attempt by superstitious European Khazarian Satanists to somehow reverse their fortunes. P2 Freemason sources say. It's difficult for normal people to understand the superstitious mindset of these Satanists, but essentially they seem to think they're in a battle against a goddess. That's why they chose to burn Notre Dame, or Our Lady, because this refers to Mary. Mary, of course, is the Christian name for the goddess Isis, who raised an infant until he could defeat Set or Satan. It is for the same superstitious reason that these Satanists created a horrific terror organization and tried to call in ISIS in order to weaken support for the goddess in the minds of humanity. The hope in sacrificing Notre Dame was to unify European and world sentiment around German Rothschild slave president Emmanuel Macron, just like Americans rallied around George Bush Jr. after 9/11. The sources say, instead, according to multiple sources and the French Yellow Vest Resistance, the burning of the cathedral is being blamed on Macron and his German puppet masters. So the result is the same. They failed. So that's why I found it funny. It didn't matter who ended up doing it. It didn't have the intended effect because you got from your source but they were trying to activate some kind of energy vortex in there or something.
Yep.
So the good guys wanted it stopped. So it got stopped.
It had something to do with what they were putting in with the restoration. You know, it was like the restoration was a cover for something else.
Oh.
That's why you have the restoration happening when all this other stuff happens. But it's all timing. I mean, it's just like, but I have to say that to me, okay, if it was, and I do believe, I'll go on the record of saying, yes, I think that it was the good guys, you know, the good side of the secret space program or whatever it is that did this, and that by doing it the way that they did it, because there was also another picture, somebody, a woman in front of the Notre Dame was taking a picture of a little girl dancing with her dad. And
what was that picture?
Well, in the corner of the picture was the same thing that we saw from the hotel.
The UFO?
Yeah.
And oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was, you had to kind of like, I think you had to kind of look for it or whatever, but anyway, there it was, and it was in the corner. And see, when that photograph that they've got of the ship coming, you know, it just appears, it just kind of fades in, stays there for 3 minutes, fades out, and as it fades out, the smoke from Notre Dame comes right across it. That picture to the left, when you're looking at the picture to the left, is where Notre Dame is. So she's on the ground, and she gets a picture in the right corner, exactly in the same position in the sky where this thing was being also simultaneously photographed from the place on the hotel. This is the most...
So there were concurrent photos of it.
Precisely. All right? Now, if you're the good guys, you know, whether you're E.T. or you're even the bad guys, to knowingly appear, sit there for 3 minutes, and then disappear... This is not something that they thought they were going to get away with. So I see it as a marker for disclosure.
Yeah.
I think also, we're going to see more of this.
That you mentioned that in the previous show, the other thing that it's a piece of evidence to make you make sure that it's the good guys is the absence of a body count. Everybody knows that the cabal, when they do their stuff, they're betting on lots and lots of bodies.
And the bees on the roof all survived.
What?
The bees.
Oh, yes, I remember. Yes, yes.
They had beehives on the roof of Notre Dame, and they survived.
Mm, look at that.
Now, it's one thing. The bees could have flown away from it, but the hives survived. You know, to me, this is like, and the fact that the concept of them going against the goddess. See, you remember me hearing me say, I think that those people bet against Gaia. That they did not think that there was a creator consciousness. You know? And all of a sudden, even though you got some of them that absolutely understand it. And the Isis, you know, the whole Isis thing that permeates the... you know, virtually all of the secret societies, even in you know, Washington D.C., there's a case being made that the whole city, everything about it, is being dedicated to the goddess. So you have this kind of a movement on one side, and then you got these others that bet that side was wrong. You know, and us guys in the middle. Well, let's be honest. For the most part, you know, none of us thought about it. I don't know. You know, who is talking about Gaia? Who is talking about the goddess? Not very many of us. And all of a sudden, it's like, boom. Oh, my God. She is a god. She is here. She does exist. Mother Nature is really here, you know? And you get more and more energy being put into that so that now, you know, the dark side is realizing, well, crap. She does exist, you know, and I think that all of a sudden, you know, and also I'm getting the images of the pre-Adamites.
Mm.
And all of a sudden they were there, you know, like pre-Adamites. Pre-Adamites, Dolly, are the ones that may have crashed into Antarctica.
Initially. The big heads.
The cone heads. Yeah, the cone heads. And that they've been hiding out in the Vatican for ever and ever, which is why they have those really weird cone heads things that cover their cone heads.
Oh, yes. I remember learning about them.
Yeah. Yep.
Thank you, yes.
But all of a sudden, they started flitting through my mind, because they are very, very active. They were the orchestrators of the crucifixion, in my opinion. It certainly wasn't Harold. You know?
Well, even back then, politicians were little more than puppets of their wealthy masters.
Right. Pontius Pilate was, you know, because I have not been paying any attention to this History Channel story of Jesus, but one day it just didn't resonate with me, but one day it got on, and it was talking about this, and it was somebody talking about this, you know, they were talking about Pontius Pilate, and he had apparently done something that, you know, upset whoever was emperor at the time. I don't remember who it was, and he knew that if he upset them again, he was probably going to get thrown to the lions. So,
well, isn't that why he was stuck in Israel?
Yes. And
you get those bad posts when you piss somebody off. They put you out in the middle of nowhere to get you out of the way.
Right. And this person was saying that the Jewish priests actually sort of blackmailed him and said, you know, we're going to complain to the emperor and you're going to be dead if you don't, you know, get rid of this guy for us. So that's why he washed his hands. Because he felt very, I think,
guilty.
I think he must have been touched with the knowledge of this was more than he understood, mm-hmm. you know, and he just didn't want the bad karma, you know, to be the guy that actually did it. He was the guy that, you know, allowed it to happen. So, but it
wait, isn't negligence, doesn't negligence make you just as guilty as the actioneer?
Well, no.
Because it's all about awareness. If you didn't know, well, okay, it's not your fault. You didn't know. But you are fully aware of what they're going to do. So it's being done with your knowledge. So you're just as guilty as the ones, you know, pulling the trigger or making the stabbing.
Well, I believe you're right, because in the Bible it says even if you think it, you're guilty of it.
So.
Oh, dear.
I know, that's what I said. Uh-oh. I'm in big trouble.
But see, I agree with that. You know, every thought you think goes into the collective.
Yeah.
So, you know, you think bad things, that's what the collective is being fed with. You know? That's why I only think of lollipops and bumblebees.
Chocolate ice cream.
And peanut brittle with lots of nougat.
In so Oak Island. It's the season finale, Walt.
Oh, yeah. In the last 7 minutes of the show, you have to bring the audience up to speed.
There's not much to get them up to speed by, because not much is happening. It's got kind of lame there. But the...
But wait a minute, last time you said that they were ready to nook the island just to get to the mystery of it.
You know, I've got this, you know, I won't exactly say that it's a feeling, because because my mind has also been pondering it. And I think you said something to me, or somebody said something about the, what was his name? The Crooks, ball thing. What was the guy's name?
Vault thing?
They opened his vault. What was in it? And it was empty. Rivera did it.
Oh, yeah. The Al Capone.
Al Capone's vault. And they got in there and there was nothing there. You know, I got this feeling that there's a back door and somebody went in the back door and took all this stuff out. Even if they find it, there's not going to be anything there anymore. And, you know, and today, well, I saw a blurb for what's coming up, and they're back in the water, and they're seeing something, because I think that the back door was underwater, but not very much underwater, and that over the years, as the water got a little higher, it's gotten deeper. You know?
Yeah, I saw that blurb, too. And I was wondering, well, are they going to find something like an opening for the back door, or are they even going to find the back door, maybe?
I don't know.
Got me interested.
Yeah. It was like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
Oh, my
They're gosh. Dangling that carrot in front of us.
Yep. And then they started to going after the swamp again.
Yeah.
And that swamp has been so strange. See, Walt, what probably was that there was probably two islands very close together, even maybe almost attached, and that they were able to create this swamp thing between them. Okay? In other words, they think that they may have taken a ship and sunk a ship in the swamp area, then made it into a swamp, because when you look at it, it's a perfect triangle. And it's odd the way it's made. So they have tried to drain it, they've drained it, they found weird things, they found the metal detectors would go off and they'd then get, you know, go out to get whatever was there, and now the metal detectors don't work. It's like spooky. So, Marty, the one that's got the money that, you know, behind it, Marty and his partner there, but Marty says, I don't like going to the swamp. I hate the swamp. I don't want to go to the swamp. But he said,
I hear your narration and I get the image of a group of cavemen trying to work a laptop.
In some ways, that's kind of what it is. Oh, my God. So now
they called in a lot of experts, though. You got to give them credit for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So they're going to drain the swamp. And they will do that tonight, right? Because they have to. Yes. Because this is
season finale. They have to.
That means that they didn't work after that, and they had a permit to drain it this year. They don't have a permit to drain it next year.
Oh.
They'd have to go through the whole processing thing again. But by now...
Once they're done, are they going to leave the island the way they found it?
I'm not sure the island will be there when they're done.
Oh,
I mean, it's just one of the most amazing tales I've ever...
And I'm wondering if the treasure is really between... Oak Island and that other island where the man said you're gonna find stuff in the water between these islands. He said that a while back, maybe even last year. But I wonder if it's gonna be where he said, in the islands between. I mean, the waters between the islands.
That could be where the back door is. We don't know.
Don't know nothing.
maybe when they were in the water, maybe it was the swamp, not the ocean.
What?
When we saw them in the water looking at this man-made thing in the water, maybe that was in the swamp, not the ocean.
Because
it wasn't that deep.
But I thought Marty's son, he was on a boat.
Well, yeah, they might be in a boat in the... Well, I don't know. Anyway, it's going to be on tonight in about 2 minutes. Well, they're going to go back over what they did last week, and then they do the new one. It's a fun... It keeps us amused, right, Dolly?
Certainly does.
Give Dolly a reason to live.
That's right.
So if they find a piece of wood with something that looks like a button, and in ancient English it says, do not press... And they press it, and then you see this mushroom cloud over the horizon, and you know the show is over, right?
Well, you know, I'm kind of jealous of Dan Blank.
Dan.
The older man? Yeah. Is that Dan?
Dan.
Who owned the and sold it to Marty and company. Anyway, I'm kind of jealous of him because he already knows what's there and what isn't there because he crossed over. He cheated.
I think he was trying to hang on. I think he
you,
was
you
trying
to hang on. You can talk to him. Or don't you have permission to talk to him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but no, they won't tell us that.
Oh.
Well, maybe it's up to us what's going to happen. Maybe we're the ones who finish the story. But we finished the story of Cosmic Reality Radio tonight.
Oh, already?
Yeah, it's been fun.
It's having fun.
Thank you, kids.
Thank you, Nancy, and thank you, Dolly, and thank you, everyone, for spending this evening with us. We'll see you again next week.
Yes. Thanks, all. Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Preaching, the unknown.
You have been listening to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. Thank you for listening. Choose your heart.